Good afternoon. Jishin, if I seem to fall off in voice, as I sometimes do, please raise your hand and we'll speak properly. From the Transmission of the Light, Book of Koan's History by Keizan Zenji, also known as the Denko Roku, stories of the transmissions from one teacher to the next, starting with Shakyamuni and then going up to Dogen and then a couple more down to Koan, who she's not here. This is the 49th transmission, and it's titled the one on Zijian. I'm using the Japanese names because the Chinese names are too hard for me. I was brought up in the Japanese. And Zijian is interesting because, well, I have reasons I'll talk to you about in a minute. Let this be a song. Don't wrestle. Don't wrestle at all. Zongju, who was Zinjian's teacher, enters the Dharma hall and proclaims to the assembled practitioners, "Awakened ones have a secret body, not a secret verbal teaching. But this hidden body is not hidden to Maha Kashyapa, who smiles, nor is it essentially concealed from the gaze of any living being. For it shines always and everywhere. A full moon in a clear autumn sky, totally naked, unobscured." The moment he hears these words of light, the successor Zijian begins to weep profusely. Shattering monastic decorum, he cries aloud, "Why have I not encountered this mystery before?" After the completion of the master's discourse, Sanju's discourse, he invites Zinjian into his private chambers and inquires, "What has caused you to weep so intensely?" The destined successor replies, "The hidden Buddha body is not hidden to Maha Kashyapa. He says that the present Buddha, you were predicted by the ancient sages, only boundless clarity now shines." After a while, when you're in this practice and hear some of these stories for a while, they become old friends and sing their own stories. "Why have I never encountered this mystery before? Has that ever come up? Has that ever come up?" Part of this talk that I'm going to deliver is inspired by our work with the Tenzo and that wonderful feeling of nothing is hidden. Nothing is hidden. So why haven't I encountered this nothing that's hidden before? Why haven't I? By the way, Zijian holds a unique place in the history that you're probably aware, familiar with. He was, of course, he was the last teacher in the Uman school back when it started to decline in the 11th century. And he was also the teacher of Rujing. Rujing was Dogen's teacher. Dogen's teacher. So, another part of this talk about why have I never counted this mystery before, nothing is hidden, is You know, I've mentioned this ongoing inquiry I have or sit with myself from time to time is, what if I never heard about any of this stuff? What does that feel like? What if I really never heard of any of that? Yes. So the struggle, the field comes up, how do I express myself in a fashion that will let you see this mystery for yourself? Using the word mystery for lack of anything else that I want to use at this moment. You could fill it in with anything. How do I get myself to express a way that there's nothing hidden in some fashion, at the same time, really have us experience that we all weep together in the same language and we all cry together in the same language, don't we? How do we make this practice real without just talking about it like I'm doing now? I've talked to you before about the guidebooks. You know, you can take any of these sutras or any of the great teachings, they're like guidebooks to lead us in. Like the Lankavatara Sutra, which talks really about experience, not about words. Not about words, just talks about getting to experience this. These guidebooks are blueprints. We can take a blueprint and we could build a house from that. We could first imagine it and then build it. Or we may have come across some kind of house or teaching and then backtracked and written a blueprint about it. But you cannot live in the blueprints. You cannot live in the guidebooks. We live in this. And that's quite important. Today, I'd like to share some events from the past that might illumine this koan. It was a time that was lived and not blueprinted for me or felt here. There was no need for meaning, either hidden or not. You see, sometimes we say fire, but fire isn't fire, is it? And water isn't water, is it? We don't get burned by saying fire, nor could we quench our thirst by saying water. But to feel these things, to have the blueprint, so to speak, disappear and experience that is a reflection of our practice, which is what? Transmission, as is going on in this koan, from mind to mind, not with word to word. Like right now. Just this. So, as Master Kaizen says in his commentary here, the whole universe, these moments, becomes sun and there's nowhere to shine. What crazy Zen stuff. What crazy Zen stuff. What does that inspire for you? There is no place, in other words, where Shakyamuni does not exist. Nothing is hidden. This rug, this cup, nothing hidden. Nothing hidden. Not at all. And as I think I said to someone this morning, I made a note about this, to start appreciating even the brief recognitions that come up of that. Of the moment you step out into the sunlight, or a cold puddle, or you step into a puddle with your shoes and the water's there. That moment, that brief, to take those and appreciate them more and more and more as what? As the truth of that moment. As what we'll say, mystery unveiling itself. Of everything that is not hidden, being right there. Now, I want to share with you something before I get into another piece here, what I, in fact, originally thought I would be delving into, but relative to this business of experience and source and things that we talk about, you know, frequently I've said to you, or offer the inquiry, what is it that knows it? Okay? You know, we've gone into that from time to time, personally or collectively. Well, one of our beloved Sangha members at Avon Park was a real bodhisattva. He, Jeffrey Morales, he conducts, he's a bright man, and he conducts teachings for the people transitioning from in institutions to outside. And he's wonderful to work with. He doesn't practice, so to speak, Zen or Buddhism. He's into, what's the, with the Nordic gods, the Vulcan or?
Votan.
But yet, we have a dialogue. So when I said to him, you know, what is it that knows it? What is this hidden mystery, okay? Some replies. What is it that knows it? It is the spoken truth without a word whispered. What is it that knows it? It is the smile of a child filled with wonder and innocence. What is it that knows it? It is sitting in silence in a moment of clarity. What is it that knows it? It is the essence of beauty embraced without judgment. What is it that knows it? It is the wisdom to know that yesterday and today is now. What is it that knows it? It is a bond without bonding. It is the daring of silence. What is it that knows it? It is suffering and compassion. It is life and death. What is it that knows it? Nothing and everything. I feel as if be cut off right now. Anything else to come out is defaming. However, I've been preparing this little thing here for actually many, many years. And it's an opportunity to say it to someone other than the mirror. That's very important. There's something about it, being in the Sangha, being with each other, see what comes out and expresses. Tomorrow is the Parinirvana anniversary of one of my teachers, Koi Bastis. She died, I always remember, it's Income Tax Day. We were dear, dear friends. Some of you have been around long enough to recall when I was flying back and forth, you know, frequency to be with her. We had sort of started at the same time. She started a couple of months after I did with Roshi, and took the fast track that she did in many, many things in life. And she was already a monk, and then a Denkai, and whatever it may be. And I was sort of like behind her, and getting coached here and there. I was her pet. She would make sure I didn't do too many things wrong. So, I had some extraordinary teachings that occurred during the time that she was going through her last months and such. And I over the years, I've put them in the form of a writing. And I think one of these days I'm going to publish a few things. So please give me the I hope you allow me the space to read some of this, but I'll interject some, you know, instant life into it. But I hope that it responds amply to some of the interviews we had relative to issues that came up today. Last month, I was on my way to visit Coe Cenci. She was living in Long Island. I was already down here. She was up there. My dear friend Madeline, with whom I had been spending a fair amount of time. The events that I will share occurred on that visit, but some introduction is needed. On prior visits, I assisted in organizing her affairs and personal properties, but not in a way that had any finality or doom. Okay? The actions were individual teachings that seemed to accumulate, treating each thing, each item that had to be dealt with, or it be a paper or a caser or whatever my thing, one by one, each in a different way, with full care, was an exercise in understanding that all are one, and in a way to return the favor that each thing had offered. And how do we return that favor? By dealing with it, as Master Uman would say, the lifetime of teaching, appropriate, an appropriate response for each thing, which again is another way of, in a sense, the formula for happy, just be appropriate for this breath. That's all that's needed. Returning the favor of each thing had offered by dealing with it appropriately was as silently as the flower being held up, as if each item transmitted itself as well as everything else in this universe, as well as anything else. Now, Coe had previously decided not to further treat her cancer. That had been going on for a long time. My first visit after a hospice had entered the picture was a stumbling one. Doing what I thought should be done for someone in her situation, all the while really not knowing what to do. Has that happened? After natural sharing between old friends, I found myself trying to entertain her with stories, small talk, bull. It didn't take long for me to realize that entertainment was not called for, and that as soon as I stopped trying to entertain and we just sat, that I felt less gripped by the situation, and she was more restful. There was no demand for anything in the moment. It had been fulfilled. Nothing was hidden. In the phone calls between that visit and the next visit, I found myself exploring this discovery and took steps off the pole as never before when I was about to say something that my mind would label a person in her condition should not be asked that. I did ask. I did share. The openness was refreshing, liberating for both of us. Once recognized, it supported her in acknowledging the teaching she was offering to myself and others. I then came back to Florida. And at that time here, we were using as a study book Emptiness Dancing, I think it is, the Ajahshanti book. And the very first chapter in that book is about freedom, is take on freedom. Well, before boarding the plane for my next visit, I opened the book, and read, my eyes read the line, "Freedom is knowing who you truly are." And since we had been studying it, maybe I was sort of primed for what followed. Just that phrase, freedom is knowing who you truly are. In the 3-hour flight following, it was a 3-hour flight of release from definitions. You know how I talk about this ising? But there was something there that was releasing. There was no need to define what this freedom is or was. It was just totally non-blueprintable. Absolutely, totally that. It was so simple, no words clung there. The response, and we've talked about this a lot, the response had arisen simultaneously with the reading, as it does teach us in many of the sutras. And it arose with the lightning inquiry of what is freedom or what is mood. So as I arrived for this next visit, I entered the room and sat beside Madeline without words other than, hello. Our eyes met, yet there was no chattering of the mind about what to say or how connected I felt. There was just Buddha's flower and Kasyapa. Each of us, in a way, simultaneously in both roles. Nothing hidden, nothing secret, just the ordinary, just the source. So simple, no need for words, yet joined. We were received by each other, yet giving to each other at the same time, and yet there was nothing to give. To receive. It wasn't hidden. I was reminded of something with the Dhammapada. It says, better than a speech of 1,000 vain words is one thoughtful word which brings peace to the mind. After the fact, I might say that something was present in the in-between. So untouchable, indefinable, unseen, yet mysteriously understood. Understood as to result in a total ease of being. Not making more of it, not pretending it to be otherwise. There was no victim there. There was no savior of the moment. To say any more, I guess, would ruin it. The relationship, koidoshin, was not of individuals. What was happening was not mine any more than the sky or the birds or the cars that were going by. Not mine, yet no other than mine. As in I alone between heaven and earth, and I'm the only one, and the Buddha awakened. Madeline and I were intimate with Source, which is the same as being intimate with our ordinariness, which is the Buddha mind, liberated from the misconceptions of any separateness. Source, this diamond body empty of any substance. Wow. What craziness. Like pure presence without any place or time. The complete empathy diamond body which weeps, cries, and laughs, and sees and hears as all life, and has a deep burning tenderness to all beings in their aspirations for awakening. Isn't that what we do here? Really? Silence, stillness was our mutual koan, you know, ko to make even from uneven, an. Really, a way of looking at that is as it is. Zen, the celebration of life, right here and now. Koans, inquiries, stories such as this from the Denkwa Ruku, allow us to know that unknowing. Easy to say or mimic others' words, but then moments occur of weeping, or smiling, or as as Jeffrey responded to what is it that knows it? Or recall that just in the last few weeks, I happened to say that in the Zendo, and I said, what is it that knows it? And just Rose's smile. It's right there. It's all the knowing that was needed. But the knowing that is enough, but not, and here's the point, not a knowing that ends the inquiry. Not a knowing that ends the inquiry. And that's why one of the reasons we come here together, if not the sole reason, there's something there to continue this inquiry. To inquire and respond, and not to question and answer. To raise the flower, and at the same time, smile and live. And as Master Umwan says, the teachings of a lifetime master, he says, an appropriate response. Just to fulfill this moment. So we learn, as Master Dogen taught us, to really rub the sticks together till there's smoke, which a lot of us here have been doing. But don't give up there. Keep rubbing those sticks. Keep going on and on and on. I had labored with concern about a lack of conventional sadness for losing a friend. But there was no need to pretend the experience should have been otherwise. Just serve her and myself by, again here now, returning the favor, honoring that favor. By seeing the wholeness right here in everything, by, so to speak, receiving and being the wholeness. This freedom, this wholeness, this awakeness, awareness is the same for all of us. Everything, everything is a beautiful expression of its quality of diversity. There was a sense of freedom there, freedom that is so natural. I'm reminded of the story of the second ancestor in China, Eko, when Bodhidharma sent him looking for his mind. Bring your mind, I'll set it at ease. Eko finally came back and did not say that he looked and could not find his mind. He said that I have looked, and its very nature is that it is unfindable. Indefinable. We can't find it as we are it. This freedom expressed in clear speech with Madeline, no withholds, no entertaining, unedited talk without hesitation, in contrast to that which could be produced by being, so to speak, wary of discussing her present status. The freedom that a bird has when the realization that the sky has no limit is there. Were the sky to be limited, as Dogen says, there could be no flying. No matter how far the bird flies, it never leaves its element. So how can we get lost in freedom? This morning we chanted, vast is the robe of liberation. How wide that is. How boundless. Zen is the liberation, the freedom of life, right here and now. Through realizing the response of the inquiry, what am I, what is Mu, as in the jewel mirror awareness, the response arises right alongside, simultaneously, with the inquiry. So Madeline and I were present with each other with no impulse to change what was happening, nor to change each other. This dropping off of need to change, ironically, does change us. In the humility of that kind of love, somehow we jump to change. Something in our DNA does shift. We realize we don't have to fear the Wizard of Oz. And we look and see that it is only our minds pulling the strings. No feeling is final. Happiness is, in a sense, fulfilling the moment, but the moment not just for ourselves, but as it is fulfilled for everything. So at some point, we will know the fire of truth which burns any need to pretend.
We can stop negotiating and bargaining with life. Stop pretending. As T.S. Eliot, stop hoping and loving, says, T.S. Eliot says, stop hoping and loving for the wrong reasons or things. And this freedom, this unhidden teaching, this awakeness, awareness, is the same for all of us, as unhidden as this moment, a shared quality, not separate. This is letting go. This is forgetting self. This is the self settling on the self. So we sat in Zazen, and then quietly I asked if I could read to her from a book of Maizumi Roshi's, Talk of the Great Mountain, that I had previously read a few pages of and felt was special. In this climate of freedom to be, I began to read, not recite. It was as if the words arose from a source not mine, as if the words were reading us, as if the always never secret teaching was being illumined through the words of Maizumi, as if Maizumi and we were companions. He was visiting with us, a startling companionship with Buddhas of past, present, and future. As it says in the Lotus Sutra, only a Buddha can meet a Buddha. And this companionship is there all the time. That is how we carry the transmission, the awareness of the ordinariness of the flower, the equalization of core, the indefinability, the freedom. He was telling us a story we already knew, that we all mysteriously and silently understood. Kaizen, Master Kaizen, offered a verse to this koan. He said, what is the principle of this hidden expression shared openly, heart to heart, or mind to mind? He says, we were to call it an unseen body, indestructible as a diamond. How immaculate, vast, and radiant would such a body be? Kaizen says that our true body is the diamond body, the awareness that cuts through everything, that is everything, and cannot be known nor hidden. The diamond body of self-luminous awareness is a timeless wanderer, not a seer or seen, only the seeing by this, as Kaizen says, faceless fellow, who as I am lived by, is living it. Sheer alertness. Kaizen further talks about how this can be actualized. He says this only comes about by deep tenderness for all beings and aspiration for this awakening. This complete empathy is the diamond body. We don't have a need to manufacture compassion. We are naturally willing to play in this dream within a dream. Even though awake, it does matter. After all is said and done about freedom, control, karma or no karma, predestination or free choice, when freedom of not having to define, I like the word signlessness, or I talk about, we've talked about lately, this disease called ising, I-S-I-N-G, like enlightenment is, or freedom is. Rather to say enlightenment is like and express it in that way, not to confine it. We can see that suffering comes from thinking that things could be other than what they are at this very instant. They could not be otherwise. Now, how to do this? Nothing strange here. It's the ongoing life of inquiry. We do it with koan. We do it with history. We do it with discussion. We do it with readings of the great masters. We do it, well, I'm reminded of a koan from Zen Master Raven, Aitken Roshi's book. says, relaxing with others one evening, Owl asked, "What is the spirit of practice?" Raven said, "Inquiry." Owl cocked his head and asked, "Well, what do I inquire about?" And Raven said, "Good start." So what do you inquire about? Just to have that inquiry come up and not let it linger as a question that needs an answer that will kill it, but an inquiry that comes up and is felt and experienced totally by the body-mind. So Zen is seeing into one's own nature. Zazen is doing that seated. Dogen said the Zazen he taught was not meditation. It is the doorway to repose. In other words, nothing to look for. And bliss, just this as it is. So take the backward step. These next two periods speak to the voice of freedom, of non-grasping, non-craving. What is it that craves? Not why. What is that like? Find your own voice. Indefinable. No place where it is not. How can you fail to realize it? How could Mahakashyapa fail to see the flower? Nothing is hidden. Reality, realizing itself, living it and being lived by it. Open that hand of thought. A reminder again, as Dogen says, keep rubbing the sticks together. Don't stop when you see just smoke. Go until there's fire, until we see the moon so full it fills the sky from horizon to horizon, and there is nothing there for it to illumine. Until it, as I think Lily Tomlin said, gets so good you feel the universe is having goose pimples. It might seem to be an enormous and seemingly immeasurable journey from head to heart, but as Edward Albee said, it is often necessary to go a long way around to come a short way to this very Nen. Four vows.